right, thanks for not denying the doo-doos. Open up to Ecclesiastes 4. It's on page 472. That's where we'll be at tonight. Tyler is one who'll be very confident going in, but he folds to peer pressure. All right, so anytime everybody goes with the doo-doos, he's there. All right, so our next role is we got to get him to sing Carrie Underwood's Jesus Take the Wheel. All right, that's part number two. It's probably the greatest worship song ever written in the history of mankind. Okay, so... all right, open up to Ecclesiastes 4. If you haven't been with us in Ecclesiastes yet, here's what it's about. It's written by Solomon. He's king over Israel, wrote about 3,000 years ago. He gets a lot of wealth, a lot of power, and gets all the opportunity to do what he wants to. When he does that, he leads a very wicked life. So when he gets old, he looks back and says, here's some reflections on life. Now, it's going to be a little harsh, a little aggressive, and so it's going to get us out of the idea that life just goes a certain way and it's got to be like that. But what it does do is it gives us hope and it makes us happy, because if we can get out of kind of the rut of life and see beyond some of the surfacey stuff, then we can get to real depth of living and not put our hope in stuff that is going to let us down eventually. All right, so last week we started a little mini series on justice, that there's injustice in the world. It happens a lot. It's hard to find justice. And so this week, what Solomon's going to do is he's going to kind of continue that on a little bit. All right, so we're going to read all of chapter 4. And you may think, oh, this is going to take forever tonight. You're right. Okay, so here's Ecclesiastes 4. All right, it says this. Again, I saw all the oppressions that are done under the sun, and behold, the tears of the oppressed, and they had no one to comfort them. On the side of their oppressors, there was power, and there was no one to comfort them. And I thought the dead who are already dead more fortunate than the living who are still alive. But better than both is he who has not yet been and has not seen the evil deeds that are done under the sun. Then I saw that all toil and all skill and work come from a man's envy of his neighbor. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. The fool folds his hand and eats his own flesh. First evidence of zombies. Better is a handful of quietness than two hands full of toil and a striving after wind. Again, I saw vanity under the sun. One person who has no other, either son or brother, yet there is no end to his toil. And his eyes are never satisfied with riches, so that he never asks, for whom am I toiling and depriving myself of pleasure? This also is vanity and an unhappy business. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. Better was a poor and wise youth than an old and foolish king who no longer knew how to take advice. For he went from prison to throne, though in his own kingdom he had been born poor. I saw all the living who move about under the sun, along with that youth who was to stand in the king's place. There was no end of all the people, all of whom he led, yet those who come later will not rejoice in him. Surely this also is vanity and a striving after a wind. So you've got this thing at the bottom of your handout called a bottom line, and if you get nothing else from tonight, we want you to get this line, and it's this. Life's not fair, thank God. Life's not fair, thank God. And the four-year-old in you should start coming out right now, and we're going to all have fun with that, all right? But life's not fair, thank God. Now, I know some of you coming into the room may not believe all of the Bible. We love that. We do like 2 Timothy 3, that it says that all scripture is breathed out by God. It's profitable, it teaches us, it corrects us, and it trains us on how we can be complete and equipped for every good work by God. And here's what we'll say about Ecclesiastes. You may not agree with everything in the Bible, but you got to agree on Ecclesiastes, and then we're going to put kind of the gospel Jesus lens on what Ecclesiastes says, and then that hopefully will lead you out, all right? So one of the first things you learn as a person is that's not fair, all right? So like something will happen, and you go, that's not fair, right? So your parents will say vacuum, and you say, I want a cookie, and they'll say no cookies till after dinner, and you'll be like, that's not fair, I vacuumed. Or there'll be something where your little brother or sister will get something and you won't get something, and you'll go, I want one of those somethings too, and they'll say, no, they got that, and you'll go, that's not fair. And so we all kind of have this that's not fair mentality. And so here's just a couple examples. When someone gets what we want, it's not fair, right? So if all of you have a friend who got a car that you wanted, like some brand new car that you're like, man, that's not fair. I drive a 97. That car's older than me. Like, that's just not fair. Okay, so there's that. When someone gets something they don't deserve, that's not fair, right? So when you deserved it, but they got it, that's not fair. When someone receives praise for something they didn't do, That's not fair. So if you have somebody who gets credit and they didn't do jack, right? You had that person who was working on a project and you did all of the project and they did none of it and they still got the A, that's not fair. Then when someone gets something you earned, that's not fair either. So there's that idea that we can walk through life and we see life is not fair. And I think everybody agrees. There's not parts about life that we go, ooh, that is really fair. Because you worked really hard and you didn't get into that college that somebody who cheated did get into. That's not fair. So that's how it all plays. Now, what Solomon says is life isn't fair. And one of the ways that life isn't fair is life gets interrupted. And there's four ways that he says life gets interrupted, which is the way we'll walk through these passages. The first is oppression. The second is envy. The third is loneliness. And the last one is oblivion, which is awesome. Okay, so oblivion is that sense of fading out of existence and no longer in people's memory. Woo! Okay, so the first is oppression, and that's what we'll read first. It's verses 1-3. It says, again, I saw all the oppressions that are done under the sun, and behold, the tears of the oppressed, and they had no one to comfort them. On the side of their oppressors, there was power, and there was no comfort, no one to comfort them. And I thought the dead who are already dead more fortunate than the living who are still alive. But better than both is he who has not yet been and has not seen the evil deeds that are done under the sun. So the first point we've got up for you up top is this: correct oppression. Correct oppression. It'll make sense here in a second, but correct oppression. So when you live on the planet, you see that people are oppressed. All right, if you watch network television, you'll see an ad that says, help this poor kid for $7 a day or whatever for the whole month. Or for cents on the day, you can help this person live, you know, for a dollar a day, and they'll show all those things. I think the worst commercial that way is that Sarah McLachlan song that's like, in the arms of the angel. And they saw all the like dogs that have like been hit by a lawnmower. You know, it's like these really awful pictures and you're like, oh, and then you're like seeing these dogs that are having such terrible days, and it's like, don't let dogs die, adopt one. And then you want to go to the Humane Society and adopt a dog. Okay, that's the same thing that plays, just like these gut-wrenching videos that go, oh, and you want to do something about it. Okay, your ooh to that is when you visualize oppression, it just kind of goes, ooh. Now, here's where Solomon starts to say a lot of the things we've been looking at in Ecclesiastes starts to play a part. One of the reasons we so relentlessly pursue pleasure is because it's an anesthesia that numbs us to the reality of oppression in the world. All right, so we pursue pleasure because we don't want to have to deal with the fact that people are oppressed, and we can actually see oppression going on. So what do? We just try to find things to make us happy so we don't have to think that things aren't as good as they may seem. And so one of the things he says is that you're going to visualize oppression, but that you're going to recklessly pursue pleasure so that it'll just numb you to the reality. So we get busy with it so we don't have to think about it. And then what you start to see is that there is a whole lot of oppression, injustice, and that when it comes to people in need of comfort and those who are being oppressed, there are few people who are able to comfort them. Okay, so there are millions of orphans in the world. Children without parents who don't know where their food or shelter is going to come from in the day. Millions, right? There's no one to comfort the 13-year-old kid who's raising his three brothers and sisters and doesn't have parents and doesn't know where food's coming from, right? And that's true all over the world today. There are going to be kids who are going to go to sleep tonight and you would be the oldest brother or sister taking care of all of your family and not knowing where you're going to sleep. Right now, you can even think about that tonight. There are teenage kids who are going to sleep on the street tonight. Here in town, they're going to sleep on the street. But we numb ourselves to that because we recognize, we just don't want to think about the fact that somebody our age is going to be sleeping on the streets and no one to comfort. So we just pursue pleasure. Now, one of the constants of the Bible is going to be that you need to remedy oppression. You need to look to those who are oppressed and deliver. One of my favorites is Isaiah 1:17. And it says this: learn to do good, seek justice, correct oppression, bring justice to the fatherless, plead the widow's cause. And so one of those guiding principles in the Bible is that when you see oppression, that you're compelled to do something and act to resolve it. All right, so the Bible's not going to just say, hey, you see that oppressed person? That's a bummer, isn't it? Drive on. It's going to be when you see that, that your soul becomes obligated to do something on their behalf. All right, and so when you start to see that, you recognize it. So what Solomon says is when you see oppression and it starts to work in your soul, he's like, it'd be better if you were dead than that feeling of recognizing oppression. Because when you really get the gravity of issues, it's not something you just go, oh, that was a bummer, man. We saw that kid who was hungry. That was kind of lame. Do you guys want to go grab a burger? That's not the way it plays, man. It's something that starts to just like mess you up. And so he says, it's better to be dead than to have that feeling of there is oppression in the world and I've got to do something to solve it. Then he says, it's better if you just weren't born, because then you wouldn't recognize that there's oppression and you wouldn't know the feeling of there's oppression in the world and I got to do something about it. So what we do here is there's two expressions that we look to: oppression in the world, and here's the way we solve it. And one of the reasons I'm thankful for Ecclesiastes tonight is this is an opportunity for us just to get at a heart level about what we're about here in the factory and for us to really walk that out. And so I'm thankful that, man, as we're going through this, that God just gave opportunity for us to have a heart talk. So here's our expression of how do we correct oppression. The first for us in a very local way is the inner city outreach. That's something our church is partnered with. That's something we go one Saturday a month, which is a really, really, really low commitment level. But we go one Saturday a month from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And what we do is we serve food to some people who are in the area. We also give them food that they can take back to wherever they're going. And then we also have an opportunity just to hang out and talk with people. And what you've seen in the weeks that have passed, there's something very disarming about eating food and having a beverage with someone. Right? That's like when we were eating reindeer chow last week. It's just easy to go, man, this snack is delicious. What's your name? Yeah, tell me a little bit about your story. I love Chex Mix and chocolate and powdered sugar. Who doesn't? M&M. There's just something really easy about food and beverage that causes us to be able to chat. And so inner city outreach is a great opportunity for us to just say, we don't want to treat oppression as something we throw money at and just hope that that solves the problem. Like, we'll just give money to organizations and help them deal with oppression. We want it to be something that we visualize and we put our hands to solve, all right? So you need a local expression of that in order to do it, and inner city outreach is ours. Our global expression of that is heart work, and heart work is our way of giving money to build orphanages around the world. It's a part of Desperation, the promo you just saw, that's coming in July, so you want to save up for that. We got more info for your parents next month, but it's $350. You may think that that's a lot. Invest in your future. We love you lots. But heart work is the giving arm of Desperation that says 1,000 student groups building 1,000 orphanages in 1,000 days. It ends in July, and thus far, there's been 890 orphan projects that have been completed by HeartWork. All right, so by the time July comes, there's like no doubts that we're going to get to the 1,000 number. All right, so for us, that worked out, and so far, we've built two orphanages. One was pretty low budget. That was about $3,500, I think. And so that was our first orphanage that we built a couple years ago in Guatemala. The second one is significantly larger, which is $40,000. And as Crystal said, we got the shell of a building. But if you give somebody a building and nothing in it, that's kind of like, here's a gift, smack in the face, right? Like, hey, we want to get you off of the streets. Walk into this empty room. Isn't this so awesome, you guys? Welcome to your empty room. Sleep on the floor. All right, so that's something that we say, okay, yeah, we got a building built, but we need to put beds in there. We need to have clothes in there. We want to give food so they don't just show up to an empty room and say, oh, you're still hungry? Gosh, we don't have food. Okay, so there, $40,000 is why we want to go that way. Okay, so locally, inner city outreach allows us to see with our eyes there are people in the world who need help, and they are oppressed. Globally, we say that it's not just an issue in Springfield. This is something that happens everywhere, and so globally, we get to get in on heart work. And one of the guiding principles, or something that I think is really helpful as it relates to oppression, this is something you can write down in a blank there, just find an open spot, is this thing. Do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. Do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. Because the honest truth is you cannot solve the global orphan crisis. You cannot solve the global hunger crisis. You cannot solve the global water crisis. But you can solve it in one person. And you can do it with two people. You can do it with three people. You can solve oppression somewhere. And so you do for one person what you wish you could do for everyone. Again, life's not fair, and that's okay, but if you do it for one person, that doesn't obligate you to do it to everybody. You just get to say, man, I can do it for this one person, So I'm going to. So you, there's homeless people around town who stay at intersections that are very popular and they ask for food. You financially cannot give food to every person on every intersection, but you can give food to one person. And in that one person, you say, I wish I could do this for everybody, but I can do it for you. Because what happens with oppression is we see how big it is, and we say, since I can't solve everything and help everybody, then I'm going to help no one. But what I always say is it's better for you to help one person than for you to help nobody. It's better for you to have one person who you can invest in and see oppression come out of them than to say, I haven't helped anybody because I couldn't help everybody. All right, so again, do for one person what you wish you could do for everybody. And that's where inner city outreach and heart work for us get to be tangible expressions of we in this room want to put an end to oppression. And that's two contexts for us to do that. All right, let's read verses 4-6. It says, then I saw that all toil and all skill and work come from a man's envy of his neighbor. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. The fool folds his hand and eats his own flesh. Better is a handful of quietness than two hands full of toil and a striving after the wind. And so the next blank we've got for you is that envy oppresses. Envy oppresses. Work is one of the key themes in Ecclesiastes. It's something Solomon brings up all the time. Why are you working? Why are you toiling? Why are you laboring? Work, work, work. And so what Solomon does in this passage is he reveals the motivation for why we work, and ultimately it comes down to envy. That we work harder because we want more and that we want something more than the person next to us. And that's ultimately what spurs us to pursue more. And so we buy better cars, we get bigger houses, we buy new clothes, we get faster technology because somebody else has it and we want it, or we want to be envied. So we want people to say, "Ooh, you got that? I got it. Do you want to look at it? Don't touch it. You can look at it. Isn't that dope?" Right? So when Tyler's always the first person to get a new iPhone, every time. It arrives at his house the day before it's released nationally. Okay, so Tyler's always the first person. If there's a new one, iPhone 5S, quarter one next year, Tyler will have it because he's worked out this sweet deal with his mom that he's always due for an upgrade and she always gets his. All right, so when you see Tyler, right, he'll pull out the iPhone 5S and people go, "Ooh, is it faster? Yeah. Is Siri smarter? Yeah. Check this." And they'll do stuff, right? And that's fun. So then you're going to go, "I want one." Because Tyler's got one. And you see what happens when Tyler's got one. The same thing's true of pants, because anytime someone gets like a dope pair of jeans, then you're like, "Dang, those are some jeans." I mean, dang, right? I cannot spend triple digits on jeans. It just can't happen for me. So if you wear $100 jeans, all the power to you, but I cannot do that. In good conscience, I got babies' mouths to feed. And $100 jeans don't work. Now, we'll pay $40 because it's all about quality, right? But I cannot do a hundo, right? So what happens if you get new clothes? People are like, "I like that," right? So Brady got a new jacket on Sunday or last Wednesday. People are like, "Nice jacket, Brady." He was like, "I know, it cost me $11. Bing! And people are like, "That is smooth," right? Somebody gets a new haircut, new glasses. You're like, "Nice." But what happens with envy is all the time we're competing against fake people who we don't even know. Like these Joneses that we're trying to keep up with. You know, like you're trying to keep up with Brad Pitt. You never met him. I mean, maybe you have, but you're trying to keep up with this like fake person. So there's always this mountain to climb. So you'll see in the ultra wealthy of the world, I mean, stupid rich, they just start buying ridiculous stuff to outdo each other. So one guy will buy a 100-foot, $100 million yacht. Right? Because he's got now the biggest boat and most expensive boat in the world. Then the next guy will go out and buy a 110-foot. Right? So then the guy with the $100 million yacht is like, "I'm selling this piece of junk. Can you believe it? This thing's breaking down already. There's a ding. Souls." Right? So then he'll go buy a $120 million yacht and he'll park it in a lake that he can't even drive it in. Just so he can go, biggest boat in the world, right there. And that's what happens with envy. And that happens amongst poor people. Right? That happens at the very lowest level. So don't just think because my man can buy a $110 million yacht that that's not going to happen to you when somebody gets a newer car than you do, right? That you got a 97, but somebody got the 98, and you're like, "Oh, that was the year they put a CD player in. Oh, the nerve." That stuff starts to happen, and envy starts to steal joy in things because you can't enjoy anything ever. Because the moment you get something brand new, somebody else just beat you. right? So you got a brand new slick computer for college. You're like, check this. Oh, somebody comes with the like 15-inch model and you're like, oh. Then the next guy walks in with a 17-inch, oh, and then somebody else walks in and it's in their arm and you're like, no, because envy is going to cause us to never be able to enjoy what we're working for. So what Solomon says is it's better to have nothing in your hands than it is to have everything in your hands and just be busy with toil. So he's like, how content are the poorest people in the world? Really content. And I went to the one of the poorest neighborhoods in the world in Ethiopia, and they have nothing. Like, they spent fat amounts of money to cook us coffee. And so when they were there, man, they were happy though. Like, you could tell, I mean, they were just like, here's this cup of coffee. And I'm like, you worked a whole week for this cup of coffee that I'm about to drink. And you just see, they don't care. Like, there's not this sense of like, that guy's got a better mug. I'm going to go out and work harder for a new. There's just this contentness. And amongst the very poor of the world, you just see they don't care about all this stuff, but how content their hearts are. And yet you see amongst the lower class, middle class, and upper class of America, nobody's content. That we're all striving to keep up, and envy is causing us to pursue that. Because you don't buy new stuff because you need it, right? Like, I bought a new pair of jeans this week. I could say I needed jeans, but in honesty, I didn't need jeans. I had like two or three, some that I didn't like the colors anymore. Is that a need? No, but why do you buy new jeans? Because you want them to look good. You want them to look better. It's not out of need. It's out of envy. That really stinks now that I said that. Okay, so here's verses 7 to 12, the next part. It says, I'm returning these jeans tonight. Again, I saw vanity under the sun, one person who has no other, either son or brother, yet there is no end to all his toil, and his eyes are never satisfied with riches, so that he never asks, for whom am I toiling and depriving myself of pleasure? This also is vanity and an unhappy business. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. And so the next blank we've got for you is that loneliness oppresses. Loneliness oppresses. So Solomon shares the 3,000-year-old version of Scrooge, right? Money, power, fame, and no joy, right? Like, Scrooge's got it. He's got money. He's got stuff that he's counting money relentlessly. He's got power because people are bringing him money to pay him. And he's got fame because everybody knows his name. It's not good fame, but he's still got fame. And he's got nobody to share that money with. And you can just see it kills him. Right, that he's satisfied in his riches, right? He's a rich dude, but his spirit is empty. And he just has no joy in life. And then what do you see? Man, when the story starts to go on, he likes to hang out with Tiny Tim. Because Tiny Tim gets a slice of ham and is loving life. Right, but Scrooge is here eating a whole host of hogs, and he's like, not happy. This hog's disgusting. Okay, so that's what he starts to say is, there's what's the benefit if you're alone, and loneliness can crush you. And there's seasons of life where you're gonna be lonely, right? Now, for some of you who are like the extrovert, life of the party, you thrive on people around you, that's gonna wound you terribly. Like, when you don't get energy because no one's around for you to pump up, you're gonna start to go, and it's just gonna start to wound. For those of you who are introverts and you just don't care about people, right? You'd rather just sit at home and read a book. And that's all good. There's balances to the scale. But if you're introverted, there's going to come a part where you're like, man, I do wish I could see somebody in person. So we're all going to struggle with loneliness. And there was a season for me where, honestly, there was like a year and a half there where I just didn't have friendships. And you just kind of are like, all right, so mom, how's it going? Doing all right? And how was work today? And school is kind of lame. You know how it goes. So there's that. So here's what he says about companionship, right? That there's benefits to it. So one of the things about companionship is that you get help when you've fallen. So there's both the implication of you've fallen and you've had something in your life go wrong, right? So that you now need somebody to lift you up. And so that's like falling on a trip, right? You're in this walk called life and you stumble. Pow, pow. And it helps to have somebody who's like, man, I'm going to get you up off the ground so you don't have to lift yourself up. The second is just emotionally, that there's days where you may not be tripping and stumbling, but you may be wounded emotionally where it's hard for you to get out of bed. And it's good to have people who are going to call you and say, get out of bed because I love you. And you're like, yes. So there's that sense of that there's help when there's fallen. The second is that companionship and really good friendship is like a warm blanket for your soul. And so you should just look at the person next to you who's your friend and just say, oh, yeah, right there, that hit. And so what he says is like, how do people keep warm when they're by themselves? If you're analytical, you say, buy a blanket, okay? But there's a sense of eventually it's so cold, blankets don't help, all right? But if two people are trying to keep warm together, like that soccer team that crashed in the Andes, it helps to have two people who can snuggle, okay? So in a cold, frigid fest, if you're in the snow and you don't have a jacket, snuggling saves, okay? So there's a sense of just there's a warm blanket that friendship can provide. And so when you get around a friend that you haven't seen in a while and it like causes you to go, oh, I miss you. Right? Guys don't respond that way to each other. Like most dudes aren't like, oh, I missed you. But I can say I played ball with a guy last night and we hadn't seen each other in a long time. And by ball, I mean basketball. So we played basketball last night and he texted me afterwards. He's like, man, I've just missed some bro time. So what's that, man? That's warm blanket. Like, oh man, I just missed hanging with my bros. That's how dudes will say that. That's this warm blanket for the soul. And then the third is that friendship and companionship helps us fight battles. So when you're in it and you need somebody to war with you, companionship helps that way. It plays out well in Call of Duty, but it also works out well in real life. All right, so there's this sense of friends help fight battles. Now, one of the things we say about friendships in here is the majority of your friendships in high school will be non-existent the day after you graduate. And I know that's one of those things where you're like, no, not me and my friends. No, we're going to be thick as thieves. This is like Saved by the Bell part two. All right, let me just blow the myth up. You're not going to call any of those people once it's all done. You'll be friends on Facebook, but that's just going to be about it. And you'll get like 100 and something people that'll tell you happy birthday, but they're not going to ask you how you're doing the rest of the year. All right, so there's that sense of it's just going to be gone. And if you've been around here long enough, we have one of these, again, another principle that you could write down, that friends that pray together stay together. And that's something for us that we kind of repeat here often, is because when you encounter Jesus and have one of those moments that shapes the rest of your life with somebody, you're in it for the rest of life together. And so I had a lot of really good friends when I was in high school. The friends that I have today from that period in my life are all people that we experienced and had deep spiritual moments with each other. Like they were in it with me when my parents got divorced. Like they were in it with me through all of these seasons in which you needed somebody that wasn't just saying happy birthday on Facebook. But you had somebody who's like, man, I'm going to get in the trenches with you. And so that's why for us, like connect groups has become a part of how we're doing high school life here. Because most of you are going to have high school friendships that are going to be good, but when it's done, it's going to be over. So you need some people that have walked through some life with you and haven't just been like, oh, my heart hurts for you. See ya. But you need some people who are like, man, where are you at? And then let's get into that life together. And so our connect groups are on purpose because there's nothing like eating food and hanging out together that's going to cause you to make friends. And those relationships, when life gets crazy, that you're going to go, man, I need some peeps to pray for me. This crew will do it. And so some of you have gotten involved in connect groups. Some of you have not. But I'll just say, prioritize first and third Sundays from 5 to 7. Invest in what's going to come after high school for you and say that this is really, really important for me to drive to Andrew and Crystal's house this Sunday. And like they live on Cherry Street. It's off of National. It's really historic. If all of you bomb their house, they're going to think it's a crazy college party. Well done. All right, shut it down. But if you go there, I'm going to say, Crystal's an interior designer, so you're going to walk in and you're going to go, dang, this is nice. And you're going to go, I want to live like this someday. When you become an underclassman and you go to Stacy and Brady's house on the first Sunday of January, you're going to go in, you're going to be like, dang, you guys renovated your dining room. It looks dope in here. I like that Kelly Green on the dresser and those glasses on the wall. And guys are going to be like, this is so much better than my bedroom. And you're going to go, I have got to marry a good woman someday who's going to take down, you know, my LeBron James poster and actually put things up that we're proud to bring people into, okay? So that's the sense of when you get around some people who are living life and paying their bills and happily married, it's a good context for you to be in, and then it's a great opportunity for there to be depth here besides you sitting in a row with somebody, all right? Because circles have a way better opportunity of you getting to know somebody than these rows do. Because, like, Katie's staring at the back of Gabe's head all day, right? Good thing he did his hair. She's just staring at the back of his head. They are not going to become friends because of that. Like, Katie's not going to go, look at the back of that guy's head. I feel like there's friendship that's happening there. It's not going to play, all right? And the same thing's true of anybody else. All right, so prioritize connect groups. All right, let's go 13 to 16, and then we'll finish out Ecclesiastes. Better was a poor and wise youth than an old and foolish king who no longer knew how to take advice. For he went from prison to throne, though in his own kingdom he had been poor. I saw all the living who move about under the sun, along with that youth who was to stand in the king's place. There was no end of all the people, all of whom he led, yet those who come later will not rejoice in him. Surely this also is vanity and a striving after the wind. And so the next point we've got for you is that influence is earned. And you could put at the end of that if you want to, always. I don't know how you want to phrase this, but influence has to be continually earned. That you can have influence for seasons of your life, but if you want to have influence, you have to consistently and constantly earn it. And so the story of this king is you've got a guy who had tons of influence. He had an opportunity to rule a kingdom, and then he lost influence. He stopped taking advice. He stopped listening to people. He stopped being able to receive counsel, and it said that he no longer became wise. And the easiest way that I could put this is as it relates to influence and you receiving advice, it's okay if you just want to go off and say, I'm going to be bold, and I'm going to be awesome, and I'm going to do whatever I want to because I'm smart and I'm intelligent. Eventually, you're going to be standing naked in front of people, and they're all going to be like, you look great. He will never listen to anybody. And so the idea that you could be a ruler and an emperor who's like, how do I look? And you look like a fool, but no one's able to tell you anything and you won't receive it. And so there's a sense of, man, there's going to be days where you're going to have to trust your intuition and say, I know that despite the fact that everybody thinks this is stupid, I got to go ahead. For 99.9999999% of the other times, it's probably to your benefit to listen to people who have wisdom to that issue. And so as it relates to your influence, you're going to have to continually earn the fact that people should listen to you. And so for me, like most of you come into the room and they're like, at this point, that guy talks and I'm going to listen to him talk. That doesn't mean you're going to do anything about it. Like you can come and listen to me talk for 6 years, you know, 10 years, whatever. And if you never do anything, that means I've got no influence in your life. So what do I got to do? Man, I have to earn that. I have to earn the fact and show the fact that, hey, I actually legitimately care about you as a person. I have to show the fact that I've actually got some tread on my tires and I know a little bit about life. I have to show the fact that when I read the Bible, I'm not just making up junk. And when that starts to happen, you go, okay, I feel like I could trust that guy on that issue because he was right on this one. And that's just the fact of I'm always going to have to earn influence in your life. And the same is true for you, that as it relates to your relationships, influence always has to be earned, all right? And so again, there's justice, there's oppression, there's life, and I don't think anybody goes, Solomon is a liar. None of that's true. Okay, so if that's accurate, we're going to read 2 Corinthians 1, and then Tyler's going to come up here and lead some worship. All right, so open up to 2 Corinthians 1. It's on page 815, and we're going to wrap this baby up quick. 2 Corinthians 1, verses 3 to 11. If you were with us a couple weeks in the sanctuary, this is the passage I shared. But I feel like in context of tonight, it really works well. All right, so here's 2 Corinthians 1, verses 3 to 11. It says, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. For as we share abundantly in Christ's sufferings, so through Christ we share abundantly in comfort too. If we are afflicted, it is for your comfort and salvation. And if we are comforted, it's for your comfort, which you experience when you patiently endure the same sufferings that we suffer. Our hope for you is unshaken, for we know that as you share in our sufferings, you will also share in our comfort. For we do not want you to be unaware, brothers, of the affliction we experienced in Asia. For we were so utterly burdened beyond our strength that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt that we had received the sentence of death, but that was to make us rely not on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. He has delivered us from such a deadly peril, and he will deliver us. On him we have set our hope that he will deliver us again. You also must help us by prayer so that many will give thanks on our behalf for the blessing granted us through the prayers of many. And so the last blank we've got for you that we're going to throw there is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. Comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. And Tyler's going to come up here and get ready to lead us in some worship. So what 2 Corinthians 1 says is that it says that as there's affliction, as there's oppression, as there's suffering in the world, we don't have a God who sits in heaven and goes, oh, bummer. Oh, that's really lame, you guys. You should pray about it and we'll see what happens. We have a God who the solution to oppression and injustice was for him to come into the earth and to suffer in our sake to relieve us from that oppression. And so what it says that God invites us to be comforted because he suffered for our sake. And God invites us to suffer so we can comfort others who are suffering. And he faced it all so that we could approach him boldly. And here's the context for a lot of you tonight. You're very, very comfortable where you're at. And you don't need Jesus. Because you're comfortable. You got money. You got clothes. You got happiness. You got mostly everything. And so you just kind of go, I don't need Jesus right now because I'm comfortable. But that when you get to some of those nights where you sit alone, that you recognize you're not that comfortable at all. And so the reality of tonight for us is, man, the gospel is so good because as we celebrate Advent and the coming of Jesus, it reflects the fact that God came into the earth to redeem us. And so what that's going to start to do is just start to mess with you a little bit. It's going to start to jostle. And so when I started to get to know God and I started to get to know Jesus, man, there were days where it just like, he would unsettle me a little bit. Like he would just kind of unnerve me. He would kind of point some things out. And then I would go, what in the world am I supposed to do here? And then he got me around some really good people who loved Jesus and really cared for me as a person. And then just started to press me to some adults who could say, hey, let me help you in this situation. Hey, let me help you in this scenario. Let me help you here. And so as I started to get pressed that way, then I started to pray these own prayers by myself. Like, man, Jesus, if this is happening, can you relieve some oppression here? Can you relieve some injustice here? And then started to have a dialogue where I felt like I was schizophrenic because I'm praying to God, but it feels like I'm praying to my own brain. And yet he's responding and he's saying things that I wouldn't say to myself. And so working all of those things through, but then starting to feel that, man, God's inviting me into relationship with him. And that the more I just start to go with him, the more he starts to bring me in. And that as God solves my oppression, all of a sudden he starts to say, now there's other people that you got to start to do that to also. And so God doesn't just solve us so that we could go, awesome. Like life is so good now. God solves it in us and then starts to point out other people that he says, now it's your turn to go to them. And so I'm all about the, I need something from Jesus tonight. Because I'll tell you, I need something from Jesus tonight. But I'm also all about that the Jesus gives to us so that we could give to other people. And that is he comforts us by his sufferings, that when we start to suffer, we could comfort others. And that as we recognize, man, God has done this in me, that you can look at other people and say, I know the solution to that is not us having a long conversation over ice cream. But the solution ultimately to that is you getting to know Jesus. And so if you want to stand to your feet tonight, we're just going to have this place at which I think if the scriptures say what they say, then there's just a couple ways that we respond to that. I mean, the first tonight, and I just know stories and I know people, I know some of you don't know Jesus, that honestly the best place for you to start with injustice, loneliness, envy, oppression is for you just to look to Jesus and say, let me just start there and he's going to work out all the other things. That the second could be that you start to recognize that as you're living life and as you're walking through your days, that you start to see the oppression of others, and maybe you've grown numb to the fact that they're the oppressed in the world. And so that you start to say, okay, that there's some oppression that needs to be dealt with. Maybe you've been oppressed. Like we said last week, man, there's injustices that have been committed. And so maybe you've had sins committed against you that still haven't been handled yet. And what an opportunity to give that to Jesus tonight. That you could be living life based on envy and you realize your pursuits for things are so that you could have something better than somebody else and for Christ to solve that in you. Maybe it's loneliness and that you could be surrounded by people and still feel alone. But that tonight Christ could not only solve that in your heart, but that could also welcome you into our family here. that for some of you, it's recognizing that you're starting to deny wisdom, you're starting to deny influence, you're starting to press away people who've got a really good voice into your life, but you're starting to turn it off because you feel like you're smarter. But that God could just start to call out some places in you and say, here's some wisdom that you need to receive. And that the final part for us, and I think the most dangerous prayer for us to pray, is for us to say, man, God, break my heart again for the oppressed. Like, don't let me be numb to the fact that there are hurting people in the world. Don't let me just drive around and ignore some things that I could solve, that I could do for that person what I wish I could do for the planet, but I could solve that need. And that we could start to do that. And so Tyler's going to lead us in some worship. And my hope is that as he leads us, that that's just going to start to have an opportunity for God to start to reveal some things in your heart. And here in about 15 minutes or so, we're going to invite our leaders up and have some prayer time together. All right. So let's pray together and then we'll enter.